Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. We've been having a very good conversation. This has been very sobering in a lot of ways because, Coleman, we don't really sort of take the time to talk about all of the nuance that goes into racial politics and race in America. That when you consider issues like, okay, how do we get to a colorblind point? I love that when Barack Obama got elected, everyone was like, oh, now we've reached a colorblind society. We've elected a black man. I'm like, no, baby, we haven't done that. We're nowhere near that. Stop it. But yet and still, people look for and gravitate towards these quick fixes. The arguments that I make, and I think you do as well in the book, really focus around the work that you have that's also involved in this and in trying to get, the country to that place. I think you've touched on a couple of cases already. What should be, if you could just do the magic wand thing and kind of really kind of get into people's heads after 248 years of America and even more so, more time of, you know, blacks and on this land, that it's time to move on to something else, that we can be more enlightened in this area than we are. What would you say? How would you begin to do it? Does it rest in your generation? Do you see those elements in your generation of political leadership, economic leadership, societal leadership? What you see on, crazy as it sounds, on spaces like TikTok? I see a lot of folks kind of, you know, breaking down barriers in those spaces. You know, that's mm-hmm. a way where you kind of put something up and see how people react, and you kind of get the vibe of where people go. What tools, what messaging do you think needs to happen right now?
So one of my big disagreements with some recent best-selling authors on this topic is that I think children are generally born with the correct attitude about race. Most, children are not born.
I mean, it's neutral. They don't care. They don't recognize it. They don't see it. And I agree with you 1,000%. I just had this conversation. Let me cut you off real quick. But just to make a point, I agree with you 1,000% because I had that conversation yesterday with a friend of mine making that exact same point. So, but go ahead and continue.
Yeah. So, you know, kids aren't born perfect in every way. I'm not one of those, but, you know, kids are often selfish. You need to teach them to share.
Right.
This kind of thing. That's a very common problem. But they are not born with ideas about what different colors of people are like. They're not born with racial stereotypes unless they're taught those stereotypes. Right. They are, quite often born, you know, almost literally colorblind in the sense that, you know, you'll see, and I've heard stories and seen examples of this where you'll have a white kid that you ask him who which one of his classmates looks most like him, and he'll pick a black kid because they have similar ears, right? And because mm-hmm. he's not even thinking in terms of skin color as the most salient feature yet at that age. So, you know, kids are obviously, they're interested. They'll be like, oh, that's a vanilla person. That's a chocolate person. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean anything deeper than that,
right.
Which is actually the correct attitude. If I could wave a magic wand and give everyone in the world that attitude towards race, that would go a very long way to solving things. But the hope, there's always hope in the fact that each new generation is a kind of a blank slate, in the sense that if we get our act together as adults and reinforce that attitude at a, mm-hmm. at a young age. And I think, you know, Martin Luther King is the best way to do that. I think, you know, every school in the country should play the I Have a Dream speech on Martin Luther King Day every year. It just reinforces, I think, what kids probably already feel, whether they know it or not, which is it's never okay to judge people on the color of their skin one way or the other. You do that, I think it's very possible to raise a generation of children that don't have the racial hangups that older generations do.
It's interesting you say that, because when you were talking, I wanted to go find in the book something that you touched on that touches on what you just said. It's in chapter 4, Why Neo-Racism is Spreading. Mm-hmm. And you make note, prior to 2013, most Blacks and whites in America thought race relations were good. The trend line showed that fewer and fewer Blacks every year saw racial discrimination as a big issue. Then everything changed. We saw a tenfold increase in mentions of race and racism, despite everything, every indication that viewpoints about actual racism against Blacks was trending downward. Why then did people's perception of race relations take a nosedive in 2013? You give the answer in the book, but I want you to give the answer here, because I thought that was very interesting, what you say here.
Yeah, so my view of, the data is very clear on this. Really, from around the time I was born, say 90, 95, 96, until 2013, every year was better than the last in terms of how Americans perceived race. And that goes for Black Americans as well. We were on the way to exactly where we needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything reversed starting in 2013. And it's that trend line has just been nosediving since. So the question is, what happened? I think many Republicans like to blame Obama, and I don't think it was his fault. I think Democrats like to blame Trump. I don't think it was his fault. Mm-hmm. I think what happened really is around 2013, there was a technological revolution, which is that suddenly everyone had a smartphone. A smartphone with a camera and with a Facebook app and a Twitter app on it. And I suppose probably Gen Z is not old enough to remember what life was like before that. But, in 2007, if there was an arrest between a white cop and a Black suspect, and it ended in a struggle, the cop fired his gun, or, any permutation of what can happen when something goes wrong. How do you find out about that? Well, if it happens in Arkansas, it'll be in the Arkansas local paper the next day. Maybe people in Arkansas will see it on their local 7 o'clock news the next day. By the time they see it, it will have gone through a journalistic filter, which will have asked the police their side of the story, the family their side of the story, and so warded off some of the most obvious misinterpretations of what happened. Probably nobody filmed it. Maybe it's on a body camera, maybe not. Say that same thing happens in the year 2013, 2014, 2015. What happens is probably someone started filming it on their camera-enabled smartphone halfway through the event, probably missed the lead up to the event. So there'll be some context missing. Then they post it to Facebook 10 minutes later, and it's got a million views. And it's algorithmically boosted so that the algorithm is going to show it to the very people who are going to be most angered by it, because that's how you get engagement. Fundamentally, this is a change in how information spreads and in what information you see and in how you see it. And as a result of this massive technological revolution, you get, starting in 2013, you get the BLM movement. Mm-hmm. You get an upsurge in identity politics, an upsurge in the sense that racism is on the rise, that white supremacy is back, that it's open season on police killing unarmed Black men.
Mm-hmm.
And once enough people believe that, that creates an opening for some of these kind of race obsessed ideologies, critical race theory, and so forth, to get a much wider audience. And that's really what happened. Now, the question is, does that perception, one of two things could be happening. Either people are getting the false impression that racism is on the rise when it's actually not, or they're finally seeing all the racism that's actually out there. Now, a lot of people would say the latter. I would say the former, because I cite one survey in the book. If it were the case that we're now just seeing all the racism that's really out there, then you would expect people in the age of social media to be more informed about the basic facts. But in fact, you see the opposite. So, for example, I think it was in 2019, a survey asked the most online Americans who are liberal, very liberal Americans, how many unarmed Black people do you think get killed by the cops this year? And that, the answer was like 1,000. Their answer was like 1,000. The true number was something like 12.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly social media, the whole ecosystem was giving people a false sense that racism was exploding, but a very believable sense because we were all seeing the videos, right? And we weren't right. seeing videos of these things happening to white people, even though those videos actually are out there. If you search, they're just, they weren't showing up in your social media feed. And so that's what has set race relations back at least a generation.
What do you say to people who look at an event? And so let's take January 6th, and this is something that's very prevalent then and still to this day, as you have two groups of people, white folks and Black folks, looking at the same event. And the white folks see patriots. Now swap out the insurrectionist on January 6th with Black Lives Matter activists and Black Panther activists and just general Black folks who are there because they're upset about the condition in their community, et cetera, et cetera. Same reasons that animated a lot of the white folks who showed up. What do you think the outcome would be? Would they be the same?
If the January 6th rioters were all Black?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, would they have been just allowed to waltz around the Capitol like they were?
Everything you saw white folks do, these Black folks are doing. How do you think the institutions respond to it?
Well, to be fair, all left-wing institutions have responded to January 6th with extreme condemnation, appropriately so, I think. So it's really only right-wing institutions that have even been tempted to apologize for the January 6th rioters, right?
When did they apologize for January 6th?
So, I mean, be apologists for.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
So the January 6th rioters have been condemned properly by all the left-leaning institutions, which I agree with. I think January 6th was an absolute shame. And not a single one of those people was patriots, frankly. Right. But I also feel very strongly against the BLM rioters of the summer of 2020, destroying property, saying it's not a big deal, creating violence. I condemn that in the extreme as well. So I feel I have a consistent set of books about it, though. Probably there are hypocrites on both sides of that issue. In other words, there are people that apologize for the one and not the other.
Right.
On both sides.
But do you still haven't answered my question?
Oh, so when you say the institutions,
how do you,
what institutions are you talking about?
I'm talking about the core of what I'm getting at is really sort of standing back and saying that we still have this pervasive view in our country, regardless of other efforts, whether it's Dr. King or Malcolm X, or anyone else, when it comes to how Blacks ultimately engage in the society, the consequences and the results are always not all. I won't say always. I won't paint with a very, very broad brush, but a slightly broad brush. Are mostly different. So you heard and still hear today in talking with African Americans that if that group were Black, that there would have been more bodies that day. There would have been a much harsher response that day. So the question becomes, well, why do Black people still think that way? Why do we still believe that that would be our plight if we behave the way those white folks did on January 6th, that the cops wouldn't have just moved the gates aside, said, come on in. The cops seeing us storming through the halls wouldn't stand aside. The video we see of police smiling and welcoming the rioters.
I have some questions about the character of those particular officers, and maybe they're politically aligned with them, and that's why that happened. But I'm just curious, in the context of what you've written and studied, how you evaluate that attitude that is still prevalent in our community when we see how white folks respond to their own versus how they respond to us.
So that's a very good question. And I have a kind of complicated take on it. Because on the one hand, I do find it hard to believe the Capitol Police would have reacted the same way to a black crowd. Just intuitively, I think seeing a mostly or entirely black crowd encroach on the Capitol would have set something off in them such that they would have acted more like police and less like tour guides. So I agree with that. I don't have a way of proving that. That's just a
Right.
gut. That's just a gut instinct. Now, on the other hand, I really think that black people who think this way, white people who think this way, ought to question this narrative. Okay. So first of all, there's the fact that actually someone was killed at the Capitol. She was a white woman,
Right.
Ashley Babbitt, right?
Right.
People don't like to talk about that, but
Right.
it happened. And she was, to my knowledge, the only person who was actually killed by a police officer at that event. And so the question is, whereas how many pr in the series of protests that swept the nation and riots that swept the entire nation for weeks or months in the aftermath of George Floyd's death, how many people were killed? How many rioters were killed? That's a genuine question. I actually don't know the answer to that, but I don't recall seeing that it was, open season on
It was
our
an
black
open season, but
rioters.
there was harsher engagement in encountering those folks, which some would say, now look,
Now, a
let's
lot of
back.
those folks were white, however. A lot of
A
those
lot of
folks were
those folks
white.
were white,
And a lot of the most violent ones were white, if we're talking about
well, that's where I
Seattle
thank
and
you, because
Portland.
that's where I wanted to go, Coleman. Thank you for that,
Yeah.
because that's where I wanted to go, because that's the other side of this scenario, which is, I'm just trying to sort of lay this out in a way in which we can look at it from the different angles and really kind of understand what we're talking about. Because whether you're talking about students on college campuses regarding Palestine at these elite universities, you're talking about the BLM, riots and disturbances in the summer of 22, was it 22, 23, 22, and or 21,
2020,
20,
you're talking about, yeah,
20,
BLM,
I'm
yeah,
sorry, yeah,
2020.
20, I got to go back, 20, that within all of these instances, and probably including, because we know you had the Proud Boys and others who were prepared to engage militarily, if you will, all right, on January 6th. You have these other interests that come in and distort the outcome. In other words, they engage in behavior that is not the intended behavior of the folks who organize it. No one organizes to go start burning down buildings, because at that point you're losing the very audience that you're trying to convince or the message you're trying to convey. So that's a big part of it, true. But you then also do have a general, at least, perception, and that's really what I'm trying to get at. Because we can talk what actually is, but that still doesn't address the perception that you and I would be handled differently if we go out here and walk down the middle of a street during a riot with a semi-automatic weapon, kill three people. I guarantee you we're not going to get acquitted. We're not going to have, you're certainly not going to have
Now, on
Republicans
what?
necessarily rally to and make your cause celeb. So all of this kind of feeds the
Well, I
perception.
agree with the second part. I agree with the
Right.
second part 100%. But
But I'm
look,
just, no,
can
my point is, let me finish, but I'll let you tear it apart. The point is that there is a general perception that you and I will be treated differently based on our behavior, but especially based on our skin, in connection with our skin color, in connection with our behavior. So that's the perception, which is what I was getting at
that how do you begin to break that perception so that it's, you know, it's the same outcome regardless of whether you're black or white. Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Hey, all. Glenn Kirshner here. So, friends, I hope you'll join me on my audio podcast, Justice Matters. Do you care about ethics in government, criminal justice reform, a conflict-free federal judiciary? I thought so. On Justice Matters, we take on issues involving the need to reform our government and its institutions. And we talk about real, achievable reform. I hope you'll join us. Look for Justice Matters wherever you usually get your podcasts.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.